Let's get kinky. You're listening to the Funny Dom Podcast.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to the show. This week, we're going to do some Q&As on floggers and little and middle space, some choking talk, and switchery. First, I'm actually going to open my toy box because I got a message recently from a subscriber on my Patreon asking where they can find my toy box because the biggest tier on my Patreon I called Daddy's Toy Box, which is just what I called all the content on my Patreon, so all the guides and audio and all the different stuff that's there, it's just called my toy box. But I think a subscriber joined up and maybe thought there was an actual literal toy box. And so I just said, it's just all the content. But there might be some pictures or references to the toy box here. And I felt bad that I couldn't give them a literal toy box. And then I realized, well, there is a picture of my toy box there. And I do have a toy box full of gear and toys. Maybe I should talk about it. So we're going to do a little bit of a show and tell, and then we're going to do our questions, and then we'll be doing our continued reading of Outlander. Okay, so we're here. I'm sitting on the comfy floor of my playroom at the toy box, and I have a bunch of things hanging on the wall above it. So we'll quickly go through those first. I have a crop, a pink rubber ball gag. I have my clover clamps, the rule me ruler, a larger paddle that Bunny got me for Christmas, and a play collar and lead, and the large purple suede flogger that I got a few months ago. So let's open the toy box to see what else we have. Okay, so it is a little chaotic because there's just a lot in here. So this might take a little while. Let's see. We have my old favorite flogger, which is a glass-handled, like an ornate dildo-handled flogger, which is a thin-tailed, so it's a bit more stingy than the new purple flogger, and the handle has the versatility of also being penetrative. So that's a good one, I've always enjoyed that. And we have some candles. I have three candles right now. Two of these I've had for ages. The black and red candle for wax play, and I have a new purple one. I have some rice here in case I want to do a rice kneeling ritual, which quite a few of the subscribers that work with me would certainly be familiar with. I have a large, it's not too large, but it's quite sizable, very thick dildo that has a ring grip. So there's like a finger hole the way a coffee cup or a teacup has at the base, which is really good to tie with because you can put rope through it so you can tie it in place. I like that one. And I have, goodness, where to begin? There's two or three plugs, a couple steel ones and a couple rubber ones. There's a glass moon dildo, a glow in the dark. It's very pretty. We have the pinwheel, which is a double wheeled kind of Wartenberg. So there's two tracks. There's five wheels on each and it's black. They're really fun. They're so good for sensation play, and I really enjoy those. That's fun to use. I have some wooden pegs because they're always great. If you just want to do a lot of clamping. And what else is here? I have a few padlocks here because there's a spreader bar in the bottom there underneath some things. I have an old red satin blindfold, which I don't really use because it just slips off, especially around hair. I find them very impractical. So I have a kind of more a sleep mask blindfold, which is form-fitted, kind of black foam. That's much better. And I have my rope shears for safety. Ooh, I have an egg timer, which I've only used once or twice. I bought it interstate probably a couple of years ago now for one scene. I had an idea of turning the egg timer in front of the sub, and every time the sand ran out, that was a new practice. I would turn it, and that would mean, you know, flogging. And then when that ran out, it would mean the wand goes back on her clit, you know. I would make her kind of watch it to see how much time she had left. And, ooh, we have the steel, heavy, quite heavy anal hook, which I only used a few times. I used on Bunny. I got it specifically for Bunny because she wanted to try it. And I really enjoyed it. Just keep meaning to use it again. I did make her into a very pretty arched piece of art with this, with tying rope onto the end of it. So I really want to do that again. And what else up here? We have a hairbrush. A very cute kind of a little girl hairbrush with unicorns on the back. It's a bit smacky in here, but it's also quite a nice hairbrush. It just gets used as a hairbrush quite often. And I have some Shibari rope butter for conditioning in here. Some pink bondage tape. The new kind of spider gag, which I haven't actually used yet, that Bunny got me. And some bamboo canes, three or four actually. I do like bamboo. My other rulers. Another dildo, which has actually been sitting next to the purple candle. And just noticed because it's a silicone, it's picked up some of the purple and got a bit of purple colour on it now. I think that will come out, but you've got to see. That's why it's good to put your toys in separate sleeves. This toy box really does need a bit of service. And there's a few more vibrators. My favourite one is the remote. This pink one that is a remote control, and it has a little vibe point for the clip, but it also goes inside the pussy, and that vibrates as well. And the whole thing is quite just kind of big enough and just small enough to be comfortable and wearable. And that's quite fun. I've used that a few times. I have a nice bullet vibrator here. Just as a little extra little sensation play. It's fun. A pair of clamps, a little packet of boiled lollies that I think came with Bunny's collar from Lolly Wraps. Ooh, a big jumbo fluorescent paint marker. They're good for body writing. They're messy, and you've got to kind of warm them up first, like spray paint, but they can be fun. Body writing is a lot of fun. And over the side here, I've got some Band-Aids and some gold stars, little gold love hearts, putting stickers I'm a good girl. Just a few other paddles. Get a bar in there, yep. Yeah, that's mostly it. So, yeah, that's my toy box. I hope you enjoyed this chaotic little audio tour. I'm going to put some things back away and make sure that candle doesn't go near that silicone again. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. It is getting pretty full in there. We might have to get another one sooner or later. I'll close the box. Okay.
To support this space and to get access to TFD's exclusive guides to kink, spicy content, and more, check out his Patreon at www.patreon.com/thefunnydom.
Okay, let's get to some of your questions from this week's Q&A. First question. My DD only gets aroused by watching me on a screen, but not while touching me. I don't know why. Well, why is because that's what turns them on. I don't know if it's more important than that, really, other than to avoid what you're probably reading into it. When you say, not while touching you, is it possible that they are aroused when they're watching you on a screen and touching you? Is it specifically touching you that doesn't turn them on, or do they just really like watching you on a screen? This might just be a fetish of theirs. A fetish, unlike a kink, is something that you kind of need for your arousal. And it's totally okay. There doesn't need to be any kind of negative here. It could be also just a conditioning thing. Screens are so much part of our life and part of how we are exposed to, you know, sex and sexual content, that if this person is in their, say, you know, mid to late 20s, they've probably been watching screens and watching, you know, content since they became sexually awakened. So they might be quite conditioned to a screen, and that is neither positive or negative necessarily. If it's a problem, if it feels like a limitation or a conditioning that you don't want to be there and that they don't want to be there, then conditionings can change. But it means kind of going off screens. So you might want to try, if your DD wants to do this. Like I said, I don't think this is a problem unless it feels like a problem or you want to make it a problem. It doesn't need to be a problem. You can lean into it and enjoy being on a screen for your partner. Like, play with it. Set up a kind of live camera so that you're on a screen while playing. Like, that's kind of hot. A mirror is effectively just a screen. Have you tried playing in front of mirrors? Because they're fun. But I would say if they are... or watching a lot of screen content, maybe try a month without that. Just change that habit, and that might affect that arousal. It might be a bit of a habitual conditioning. Okay, next up. What is the difference between the floggers in sensation? How, when do you use which? So this is referring to the floggers that were in the picture I posted of all my impact toys, and I did mention them as well just a few minutes ago in the little toy box show and tell. I do have three, actually: the large purple one, the small little black one, and the glass handled one, which is also a large one, similar in size to the purple suede one, but different. The difference is in every way. They are different to handle. Like I said, the glass handled one has a glass handle, is much heavier and can be used as a dildo. The purple flogger has a kind of suede handle that is, it's good to hold between teeth, or it's good to kind of drape over the shoulder because it's got a nice weight to it. The smaller one
is very little, but it's very stingy. So the sensation is also completely different. I'd say the little one is very whip-like, very sharp. The glass-handled one is a little bit heavier, but still kind of sharp if you're really putting a kind of complete arm follow-through delivery. And the purple suede one is much heavier, so it's got a bit more of a thuddy, soft thuddiness to it. But again, if you do follow through with a full delivery, it can still be quite, you know, quite stingy. That's a good thing about floggers. They have quite a good range, and they can all be used well to tees. So the best thing I think about a flogger is that you can kind of just run them over the skin and just trace from the neck down to the back, you know, and all the way down the body. That's often the most effective part, you know, is doing that very slowly and then winding back, and then with a delivery, with a strike. What are some fun ways you get a middle, little, into subspace? Well, fun ways. I mean, they're all fun ways. Any way that has that effect on your sub. And from the point of view of a caregiving dominant, is fun. It's all about being the container, giving the sub the space in order to go into their little or middle space. And that takes knowing what helps them do that. And that can be different for every partner. So these kinds of questions, they're kind of, they're not wrong. They're just kind of missing the part that I don't know, which is the person you're talking about. There aren't things that are like, this is what works with every single person. It's kind of up to you. If you're talking about your partner, you're asking me what is going to do that for them. I don't know them. So you're actually better able to answer this than me. There are lots of general ways. There are lots of different, but you need to explore and try them out to find this out. So you're only going to find this out by trying a bunch of things and finding what works best for that particular little or middle. The common things are, you know, coloring or, you know, picking out a movie or a cartoon. And I would say the dynamic doesn't need to be incredibly active. It needs to be very comfortable. So if you're going to do something like coloring or some kind of playing, all you need to do as the dominant is be there in a caring, supervising role. So sit at a higher level, have them play on the floor on a nice rug, you know, or color on the floor on a little table. And you sit nearby, but just nearby. It doesn't have to be right over them, just nearby, and just read, just watch, just keep an eye, check in on them. You know, ask them if they need something or how they're doing, what they're playing with, and just be a kind of warm, kind of authoritative but caring presence. That's really all you need to do. And if you can kind of facilitate the activities they're going to do, they're going to try, and remember this is to find out what works, then that's also part of it. But then along the way, it's finding out which one worked really well and which maybe didn't. And then noting that down and doing even better next time. And that's a continual process. And once you get comfortable doing that and enjoy that, that is the fun. It is the process itself. Next. Hi, sir. Where can a good switch learn how to choke her partner as safely as possible? Okay, well, the thing is, with choking and breath play, there's a very rational camp to this that says just don't. There isn't a safe way. And I think, look, a lot of us enjoy levels of breath play. I'm not going to like act like we don't. I don't think that's helpful, but I do think it is important to call out that this is a very risky type of play. Breath play in particular, where you are aiming to restrict or withhold breath, is not a safe type of play. Like, not completely. You just got to try and do it as safely as you can and be risk aware. But, you know, you're restricting breath. You're strangling someone. You're not just choking them. So the difference is between breath play, which does tend to involve restricting airway, and choking safely, which is squeezing the sides of the neck, not the airway at the front. And you can try this on yourself. You put your hand lightly around your throat and squeeze on the sides. You can feel that pressure, that difference. But if you breathe, you're still able to breathe. And that's kind of how it should kind of be done in the safest manner. Now, this, again, also completely involves being comfortable with your partner that you're doing this with, having good safe word practices, having good trust, and doing this in a paced manner. You don't just jump into play quickly with someone who's new and go from zero to, you know, lots of intense choking. You want to make sure that you have some experience, and if you don't, that you'd go as slowly as possible and do very light amounts and check in and debrief afterwards. That all needs to be said and discussed, okay? But to safely choke, you are doing a blood flow restriction and a partial to mid, not complete. You don't want to make the person pass out. That's not safe either, even if it is only through blood flow. You just want to restrict it a little bit to get a little bit of that sensation, and mostly to get the psychological feeling of, you know, being held in that way, being so vulnerable and being choked. That's really the kind of ideal place for it, I think. No more, no less. You get a good feeling from it and a good sensation, but it is keeping the wrist down as much as possible. And if it's feeling like it's restricting airway, then you need to work on a non-verbal safe word, you know, tapping out, you know, coughing. Understand that if there's, you know, coughing or choking, that means to let some pressure out. You need to be aware of that and understood with that. You can also just have an actual, you know, tap on the arm or somewhere of your partner to kind of signal that the airway is being affected. And you want to be just feeling the pressure on the sides. So that is basically it. I don't think you should immediately go from this to now doing it. Do some more reading on it. Have a bit more of a look online. I have seen some videos on this. So I assume there's more online. Have a look. See if you can find any workshops on it. But again, just be aware that this is a risky type of play. I would put it in the edge play type category. So be as risk aware as you can be cautious, and be safe. And lastly, my partner and I are both switchers, and usually we are pretty equal in giving each other sub time, but lately they have been really stressed and have been needing it more. I love being a caregiver, but I've been feeling neglected. I'm trying to do some stuff on my own, but it's not the same. Any suggestions? Yeah, I think this is very common when you have either just one switch or two switches. Balance is so complicated. If you are a switch and you are mostly being on one side for a partner, you need to realize that's not going to work long term. You need to be balanced out, and that it needs to happen either in your own practice, which may not be the same as this this person says, or with another partner, which does work better because then you can fully be on the other side of the dynamic in a different dynamic. I feel like that's a much simpler way of figuring this out. Any suggestions? My number one suggestion is to talk about it. Again, I know it always comes down to this. 99% of the time, it's a use your words, but really, people, that really is most of the answer to so many questions is, I don't know, a conversation. That really is what you need to do. Like, you're telling me that you're feeling neglected and it's not the same. Have you said that to your partner? Because you need to. It doesn't matter if they've been really stressed and they've been needing it more. Well, now you need it more. Like, that doesn't... You both have needs, so you need to do the right thing by yourself and by your partner by being expressive, right? And talk to them. And you need to actually say, hey, I know you've been really stressed and I'm happy to give you a little bit more sub time, but I'm going to need that to balance out soon because now I'm in need of that. And I'm sure they're going to understand because they've been in that same position. So you're both going to experience the same thing. You need the other one to switch and to do that for the other and to balance each other out. And you might want to do that in a structured way. You know, maybe have a monthly check-in on just this very topic because you are both switches, and this is a thing that needs intention and kind of mindful eyes on it. Otherwise, it can, like a seesaw, it can go out of balance and just stay like that. And then you're both thinking, oh, why isn't this working? Or why are we both, having issues? Or why is one of us feeling like their needs aren't met? This is why, because this has happened, and then you're not doing anything about it. So sit down and have a conversation and possibly set up a monthly conversation space, you know, to talk about this, to see how the balance is. You know, how are you feeling about it? Is there more of one type of play or type of, you know, dynamic placement that we need to balance out? And then just kind of make that plan for the next week or two to balance that out. And if you keep doing that, you're going to be okay. You're going to basically have a good, you know, balance. It's always going to tip one way or the other. Here and there. That's just life. But if you can be aware of it and know that, oh, it's tipping this way, I have a need. If you know that you're going to talk about that soon and you've dealt with this before and it's going to be balanced out, a lot of that feeling and that anxiety goes and you can kind of get through a week or two knowing that you're then going to have that need met. You know, so you need to have that set up. And the only way you're going to do that is by not talking to me, it's by talking to your partner, okay? So say those exact things to them or have them listen to this, you know, because this is going to help them as well because they're going to be where you are. If you're both switches, this is going to happen, okay? So you've got to find the balance for each other and neither one of you can be in that one position too much. Okay, it's not healthy. So don't let any people pleasing or any bullshit like that ruin things for you, and that will also ruin things for your partner and will ruin the relationship, which ruins it for both of you. Okay, so fight off that nonsense and talk to them and make sure that your needs are getting met as well, and then you'll find balance.
You're listening to the Funny Dom Podcast.
And that brings us to our continued reading of Outlander. Now we're up to page 64 on my copy. If you are reading along, the last line, I believe, was, I wanted only to get away from him. So we're picking it up right from there. If you're reading along, have your copy ready. And if you're relaxing and just going to enjoy the reading, whatever you're doing, then I hope you do enjoy it. And if you've already nodded off, that's okay as well. Or if you're planning to nod off and have a little sleep during this, then please do so. I wanted only to get away from him. A heavy weight struck me hard in the lower back, and I pitched forward at full length, landing with a thud that knocked the wind out of me. Rough hands flipped me onto my back, and Captain Jonathan Randall rose to his knees above me. He was breathing heavily and had lost his sword in the chase. He looked disheveled, dirty, and thoroughly annoyed. "What the devil do you mean by running away like that?" he demanded. A thick lock of dark brown hair had come loose and curved across his brow, making him look even more disconcertingly like Frank. He looked down and grasped me in his arms, still gasping for breath. I struggled to get free, but succeeded only in dragging him down on top of me. He lost his balance and collapsed at full length on me, flattening me once more. Surprisingly enough, this seemed to make his annoyance vanish. "Oh, like that, is it?" he said with a chuckle. "Well, I'd be most willing to oblige you, Chucky, but it happens you've chosen a rather inopportune moment." His weight pressed my hips to the ground, and a small rock was digging painfully into the small of my back. I squirmed to dislodge it. He ground his hips hard against mine, and his hands pinned my shoulders to the earth. My mouth fell open in outrage. "What do you—" I began, but he ducked his head and kissed me, cutting short my expostulations. His tongue thrust into my mouth and explored me with bold familiarity, roving and plunging, retreating and lunging again. Then, just as suddenly as he had begun, he pulled back. He patted my cheek. "Quite nice, Chucky, perhaps later, when I've the leisure to attend to you properly." I had by this time recovered my breath, and I used it. I screamed directly into his ear hole, and he jerked as though I had run a hot wire into it. I took advantage of the movement to get my knee up and jabbed it into his exposed side, sending him sprawling into the leaf mold. I scrambled awkwardly to my feet. He rolled expertly and came up alongside me. I glanced wildly around, looking for a way out, but we were flush up against the foot of one of those towering cliffs that jut so abruptly from the soil of the Scottish Highlands. He had caught me at a point where the rock face broke inwards, forming a shallow stony box. He blocked the entrance to the declivity, arms spread and braced between the rock walls, an expression of mingled anger and curiosity on his handsome dark face. "Who are you with?" he demanded. "Frank, whoever he is. I've no man by that name among my company." "Or is it some man who lives nearby?" He smiled derisively. "You haven't the smell of dung on your skin, so you haven't been with a cotter. For that matter, you look a bit more expensive than the local farmers could afford." I clenched my fists and set my chin. Whatever this joker had in mind, I was having none of it. "I haven't the faintest idea what you are talking about, and I'll thank you to let me pass at once," I said, adopting my very best ward sister tone. This generally had a good effect on recalcitrant orderlies and junior doctors, but appeared merely to amuse Captain Randall. I was resolutely repressing the feeling of fear and disorientation that were flapping under my ribs like a panicked flock of hens. He shook his head slowly, examining me once more in detail. "Not just at present, Chucky, I'm asking myself," he said conversationally. "Just why a whore abroad in her shift would be wearing her shoes? And quite fine ones at that," he added, glancing at my plain brown flatties. "A what?" I exclaimed. He ignored me completely. His gaze had returned to my face, and he suddenly stepped forward and gripped my chin in his hand. I grabbed his wrist and yanked. "Let go of me," He had fingers like steel. Disregarding my efforts to free myself, he turned my face from one side to the other, so the fading afternoon light shone on it. "The skin of a lady, I'll swear," he murmured to himself. He leaned forward and sniffed. "And a French scent in your hair." He let go then and rubbed my jaw indignantly, as though to erase the touch I still felt on my skin. "The rest might be managed with money from your patron," he mused, "but you've the speech of a lady too." "Thanks so much," I snapped. "Get out of my way. My husband is expecting me. If I'm not back in 10 minutes, he'll come looking for me." "Oh, your husband." The derisively admiring expression retreated somewhat, but did not disappear completely. "And what is your husband's name, pray? Where is he? And why does he allow his wife to wander alone through deserted woods in a state of undress?" I had been throttling that part of my brain that was beating itself to pieces trying to make sense of the whole afternoon. He'd now managed to break through long enough to tell me that, however absurd I thought its conjectures, giving this man Frank's name, the same as his own, was only likely to lead to further trouble. Disdaining, therefore, to answer him, I made to push past him. He blocked my passage with a muscular arm and reached for me with his other hand. There was a sudden whoosh from above, followed immediately by a blur before my eyes and a dull thud. Captain Randall was on the ground at my feet, under a heaving mass that looked like a bundle of old tartan rags. A brown, rock-like fist rose out of the mass and descended with considerable force, meeting decisively with some bony protuberance by the sound of the resultant crack. The captain's struggling legs, shiny in tall brown boots, relaxed quite suddenly. I found myself staring into a pair of sharp black eyes. The sinewy hand that had temporarily distracted the captain's unwelcome attentions was attached like a limpet to my forearm. "And who the hell are you?" I said in astonishment. My rescuer, if I cared to call him that, was some inches shorter than I, and sparely built, but the bare arms protruding from the ragged shirt were knotted with muscle, and his whole frame gave the impression of being made of some resilient material such as bedsprings. No beauty either, with a pockmarked skin, low brow, and narrow jaw. "This way," he jerked on my arm, and I, stupefied by the rush of recent events, obediently followed. My new companion pushed his way rapidly through a scrim of alder, made an abrupt turn around a large rock, and suddenly we were on a path, overgrown with gorse and heather, and zigzagging so that it was never visible for more than 6 feet ahead. It was still unmistakably a path, leading steeply up towards the crest of a hill. Not until we were picking our way cautiously down the far side of the hill did I gather breath and wit enough to ask where we were going. Receiving no answer from my companion, I repeated, "Where on earth are we going?" in a louder tone. To my considerable surprise, he rounded on me, face contorted, and pushed me off the path. As I opened my mouth to protest, he clapped a hand over it and dragged me to the ground, rolling on top of me. "Not again," I thought, and was heaving desperately to and fro to free myself, when I heard what he had heard and suddenly lay still. Voices called back and forth, accompanied by trampling and splashing sounds that were unmistakably English voices. I struggled violently to get my mouth free. I sank my teeth into his hand and had time only to register the fact that he had been eating pickled herring with his fingers before something crashed against the back of my skull and everything went dark.
Hope you enjoyed listening and reading along and enjoyed the show. Be good. Stay kinky as if you had any choice in the matter. See you next time.
You're listening to the Funny Dom Podcast. To support this space and to get access to TFD's exclusive guides to kink, spicy content, and more, check out his Patreon at www.patreon.com /thefunnydome.